So we wanted to take the time to address what happened in Orlando last week at Pulse Nightclub, where 49 people were killed by a shooter. We taped these episodes ahead of time, and we thought it would be awkward, to say the least, if you heard the new episode where we make no mention of it. So we just thought we'd take a couple of minutes to, the three of us can process and talk a little bit about the new world we find ourselves in, or if this is a new world at all and this is just more of the same. So yeah, so I'm here obviously with Jason and Trisha. Hi guys.
Hi.
Hey Chris.
Let's talk about it. I will say, like, all week it's been really devastating to think about, and I think it's hard to explain to people, like, why it was so devastating. I couldn't go to work the next day. Like, I went for a while, but I was crying all day, and I don't think people really understand. Even though I didn't know anyone who died at the nightclub, I don't think people understand the trauma of these things happening. As a gay person, to that, people would rather you be dead, and they're going to walk into your space and just mow you down like no big deal. Like, the trauma of that is a lot to live with. You know, I think I know as a black person, I feel that way a lot as a black male. And more than anything, there's a lot of different ways you can enter into this conversation, whether it be gun control or homophobia or LGBT rights, or what's the newest one I saw? The problem of male violence. There's a lot of different ways you can take this, but the lesson that I'm seeing here is just really about intersectionality, like how all these things come together to create this situation. And it's not as easy as just saying, like, oh, radical Islam's the problem. Oh, gun control's the problem. There's, like, everything hit on different levels.
Yeah, that's right.
So what do you guys want to say?
Well, I was really just devastated by it. Such an awful incident. There's one positive thing that...
Oof.
Not from the incident.
Good luck.
But from the
Good
reaction.
Luck. Okay.
From the reaction. So I was really struck by the reactions of gay friends of mine, including you, Chris, who, from another part of the country, different ethnicity, you know, frankly, on Facebook, I was struck by, I guess, a collective, almost like tribal sensibility among gay folks. I kind of thought that that was beautiful, because I feel like it's relatively recently that that's been possible, or at least possible to be publicly acknowledged. You know, when incidents happen against a group of people, if something happens against a group of African Americans or an African American, there's an African American reaction. You know, I'm Jewish. When there's terrorism against Jewish people, like, there's a certain collective reaction that we have. Those groupings that we have, that, I don't know, they're real, they're acknowledged, they're public. I hadn't really seen that before. Like, again, people all over the country, different ethnicities, but saying, I'm a member of this community that was attacked, I'm devastated by it, and our community, we need to be protected, and we need to speak out. And I don't know. So that's one thing. I'd be interested to see if you two have similar reactions. Just the other thing I was going to say, it seems to me, and I don't claim to know what was in this murderer's head, it sounds like, from the different analyses, things we've learned, that it's quite possible this is a guy who had homosexual feelings, maybe even homosexual experiences, and couldn't reconcile that, and this is the way he dealt with that. And to me, it's another call that, like, just as a country and as humanity, it's time for us to recognize that, like, homosexuality is a part of humanity. It is, it always was, and it always will be. Learning to embrace that and feeling okay about that, and us accepting people regardless of the extent or regardless of their sexuality, to me, it's a wake-up call for us to really do that work.
There are a couple of reactions that I've noted, and I'll start with the one that is sort of a response to your recognition of a kind of unity, Jason. I've actually been seeing something interesting happening, and it's not to say that it's not unified. I've read a couple pieces about the fact that it was a particular night in a gay club, and that it that disproportionately the people who were impacted or who were murdered were Latino gays. And then having a couple people who were Muslim or Latino go to Stonewall and having sort of their voices silenced by sort of more mainstream acceptable voices around the gay rights movement. And so I've been sort of hitching a mental ride on that space a little bit, because in some ways there has been a lot of violence against people of color within the gay community. So this isn't actually a new issue. The intersection of where it's new in some ways is kind of the gun violence and sort of the large amount of people that were killed. But if you really look at the thing, the violence that's been visited on sort of the edges of the LGBT community, I mean, people of color have been sort of screaming about that in my experiences in terms of the way I've been reading the news for quite some time now. So in a weird way, this massacre is kind of mainstreamed something that people of color have been talking about, which is particularly trans people. And so that's been sort of, I feel like this has been a kind of wake-up call that the edges of the community have been afraid for their safety for quite some time, and that it's a kind of reminder that there is no safety in being a homosexual. And that even sort of though there had been kind of like a push and a sort of, I don't know, coming together around kind of gay marriage as kind of the central issue of the community, that people's survival and people of color and LGBT people of color has been an issue. So I feel like this has got sort of like a centralized platform. And so, and then the other thing for me personally is that, you know, whenever there's a tragedy, you see people have reactions on Facebook. What was disturbing to me were the silences from people on my Facebook feed who I know of as Christians. They had nothing to say. They didn't put anything up. It was almost as if Orlando hadn't happened. And their silence to me is something that I feel is sort of like a corrosive element around Christianity's rejection of homosexuality and mainstream religions like that rejection of homosexuality. Yep.
I disagree with that, guys. After the initial shock on Facebook, there was a lot of people who were then getting fairly aggressive with their Facebook friends, being like, you know, your silence speaks volumes. But I think people are entitled to use Facebook any which way that they want. I know I use my Facebook page in a really particular way because I have something to sell, obviously. Like, I'm building a brand, and the brand that you see on Facebook is not necessarily my life. I have plenty of opinions I don't share on Facebook. There are plenty of things that happen that I don't react to on Facebook. It doesn't mean that I don't care. You guys know that. But it just means that for whatever my reasons, I don't want to make my Facebook page about that. I think we forget that Facebook is not, it's not a direct line into people's hearts and minds where people are forced to, you know, divulge what they believe. But however, I mean, the point that you're making about the Christian community, Tricia, I is well taken. But the fact that everyone didn't run to Facebook to talk about their grief or to condemn the shooter, I don't know if that means anything other than people just use Facebook in different ways.
No, I'm talking specifically about people who have reacted to violence before, and I've seen it. That's mm-hmm. what I'm talking about. I'm talking about particularly African Americans, because I know that they can't very well get on. Many of them were very silent when I've seen them be not silent about other acts of violence. I didn't take it and just look at it as a full sweep, because I've also been thinking about how it's been showing up on my social media feed as well. And the quick rush to condemn the sort of homophobia in another religious community, rather than really recognizing that we've just spent a 12-month election cycle where mainstream Christian ideologues were attacking many different groups of people and sort of invoking violence. What I'm trying to say is that I feel as if, in many ways, Jason's right in terms of us recognizing that homosexuality has been a part of our cultural experiences, but it's also recognizing that this is a real intersection around religion and gun control that we don't have that much distinction from other people that we demarcate as terrorists and as crazies. Do you see what I mean? There's a space within America where this kind of reaction around gay people has been deemed appropriate and has been deemed appropriate in sort of mainstream party platform language. I mean, those are the things we have to confront.
Let's talk about the shooter for a second. And I don't like to do this. I really, like when Dylann Roof shot, it's been a year since Dylann Roof killed those people in South Carolina. And I don't like to talk too much about these people because I just don't like to give them the room in my brain.
Yeah.
But all the news reports are coming out. He was on Grindr. He'd been to the club. He had talked to some people on Grindr. I don't know what any of these labels mean. I don't know if he was gay. I don't know what it would mean if he was gay versus not gay. I don't know if the reason why – I don't know anything about him. I think there has been a rush to say, oh, he was raised Islamic, so I know they were a problem with homosexuality. That's why – that's part of the reason why this happened. Well, guess what? Every religion has a problem with homosexuality.
Yeah,
and the fact is that not everybody is running around shooting up clubs. I don't know what his primary reason was. Although the discussion of religion and their sort of violence – against homosexuals, be it physical or philosophical, I think that's an apt conversation to have. Its direct connection to this event, I think, is misleading. Like, I don't know why he did it, and it seems a little too pat to say, like, well, let's get this straight. Muslim, on Grindr, well, of course he shot up a room full of people. He was struggling with his gay feelings. I struggled with my gay feelings when I was 14. I didn't kill anybody.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying that, Chris. I mean, I think
people are saying that.
Okay. Well, I want to be clear. I wasn't
saying
that.
To be definitive, people are like, this is why he did it.
Yeah. Because I think any this is why he did it to me is misguided because we will never know. We never do know. We put pieces together. We come up with certain things. But you're right. Like, I mean, every incident of someone doing a mass shooting or any act of violence like that, which is so awful – you know, we go and we find pieces and we create a narrative, but there are always going to be lots of other people that had the same factors and didn't decide to do that. So, I think
but to Trisha's point, sorry to cut you both off,
yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to slot him off as a crazy either. He is someone who lives in an environment and there were different things acting on him. I just want to speak specifically like sort of like this rush to define exactly why he did it, I think is just, it's off.
I agree. I totally agree.
But at the same time, though, I do believe that, as Chris says, lots of people have feelings that they have to sort of root through, and then they either they struggle through it and come out on the other side. But I mean, for me, the thing is, he had access to guns, and he was able to revisit his internal rage for whatever reason. It's a complex spectrum of reasons, but at the end of the day, he was able to comfortably get his hands on a machine weaponry that allowed him to kill people.
Legally, too, right?
And for me...
Comfortably and legally.
For me, that's the conversation point that I've really been sticking to this week. It's just, it's this a gun control issue. There are a lot of 20-somethings who are enraged about their failed relationships, about their ability to hold jobs, about their deep-seated feelings they don't understand. Hundreds, thousands of people like that. This one had access to guns.
Yep.
And that's the problem here. Homophobia is absolutely a problem. You know, did he have, like, anti-Latino feelings? Perhaps that's definitely a problem. We can talk about the environment that Donald Trump has created, et cetera, et cetera. But really, this is about access to guns. That's what this is about for me. That's the part of it that I'm really hooking into and enraged about.
And I mean, I completely agree with that. And I think what was really telling has been this interesting moment where I've seen a lot of messaging around how the LGBT community can now turn its attention to an issue that is somewhat outside of the issues that they felt compelled by.
Yeah.
I will say that there's a part of me that paused, and I'm happy. I mean, this is horrible. This is a happy, sort of weird and horrendous thing where suddenly it becomes possible for the LGBT community to be aware of gun control as an issue, which has been an issue for lots of different communities. So it's weird for me to see the kind of centering by LGBT writers about, well, now you've fucked us over and you've pissed us off, and guess what? we care about gun control. And there's a part of me that paused and said, oh, you didn't think gun control was an issue for you before? But you know, it's always good to have a tent with multiple people right. in it.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that. But, you know, gun control has been a central issue for a really long time. And I do think it is interesting, though, that I think sort of even just sort of mainstream LGBT folks to kind of have to wrestle with the real villains in gun control, which are white men. That's it. At the end of the day, every other group of people are somewhat okay with the idea that we need to have common sense gun laws. And we have all been helped by a very small group.
Jason, respond to what Trisha is saying. I don't know if you've seen it, but I certainly have experienced what she's saying, is that the idea is like a lot of the queer community is saying, oh, look how fast we passed same-sex marriage. We're a force to be reckoned with, and now we're turning our attention to gun control, so watch out. How do you receive that? Like, how do you read that?
I think the point you're making, Trisha, I agree with you. It is both frustrating, but also it is the way things work. Like, people do what turns out to be in their self-interest. For a lot of folks in the LGBT community, gun control may not have looked like a paramount issue in their self-interest. Now it does. Just as an analog, I'll share with you, like in Maryland, we have a heroin and opioid death epidemic throughout the state that's killing a lot of white people. And now our Republican governor and other folks, it's like it is now, there's consensus now in the state that we've got to deal with this. And people in Baltimore are like, Baltimore's yeah. been the heroin capital of the United States for decades. Black people have been addicted to, killed by, incarcerated for heroin for decades, and now it's a problem. And it's like, on the one hand, it is really frustrating, and I wish it wasn't the case. On the other, we may actually get some good public policy now. Now there's talk about decriminalization and that kind of thing. So it's frustrating, but in our society where we have minorities and majority and mainstream, like this is how public policy turns. It's when more a larger tent, as you said, Trisha, sees it as in their self-interest to tackle a problem. I do think, to your question, Chris, the LGBT community has become pretty skilled and pretty effective at advocacy. And I think if gun control, if they are now going to become very active players in the gun control conversation, I think that that is fantastic. Now, whether the juice that they have is enough juice to get it done, I mean, I don't know. That is such an entrenched interest. We've seen the polls. 90% of Americans favor stricter gun control. 70% of NRA members favor universal background checks, and yet we haven't been able to get it done. Maybe this is what tips the scales. Maybe it gets us closer but doesn't do it, but like, again, I'm frustrated, but I am all for it. Like, this is an opportunity. Like, let's do it.
So, the Pulse nightclub, it was Latino night, or it's a Latino dance club. I'm not exactly certain which one it is.
But it was Latino night.
I think 49 of the 49 people killed were all Latino. And maybe this might reveal how cynical I am, but the fact that the queer community mainstreamed this violence as violence against the queer community actually heartened me.
Yep.
Because it's been too often, especially we look at violence against trans people of color, it's been too often that their silence speaks loads to about exactly the importance of the L, the G, the B, and the T in that umbrella. And so in one way, I am really happy and pleased that the mainstream queer community is like, this is the problem we're going to select. We selected same-sex marriage because these 49 Latinos were killed and they were gay. We're going to select that. It could have gone another way. It really could have.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about sort of the intersection of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of it is just the I think the largeness of the number, because we've had trans people getting killed, but it's like one.
And so yeah, even though it's like one every other week, it's not like which is exactly. Horrendous.
It's
not
horrendous.
A mass event, yeah.
But because it's a mass shooting, and because it's so obviously a gay space, and I think
right.
because it's obvious that many people can imagine themselves
that's it.
Being
right
to Latino,
exactly it. That's it.
interest. It's, I mean, you know, and listen, I've always been about recognizing that there's a high degree of self-interest in any kind of positive movement forward. It's, to me, though, it's sort of a shame, but I get it, you know. So it's an opportunistic moment, and I'm ready to embrace that. And I think it's been really wonderful to see people coming together in that way. But I've also, you know, it's been really interesting to actually discover things that, for me, I didn't know existed because of the people who've been writing and talking about their experiences. I did not know there was such a thing as Latinx. I didn't know there was like a sort of sub-community that refers to itself in that way and is a part of the language that's been used around Orlando and the Pulse Club and the sort of discreteness of their own unique experiences of rejection and what the club meant. I mean, it's been really sort of eye-opening as well, an opportunity to learn about a different group of people too. So, but it's nice that even if they were separate, people now recognize them as part of the larger gay community. And so that's been heartening, I will say.
Again, it gets, I think what you said, Trisha, is right on. Like, even people who aren't Latino can imagine, hey, I go to gay clubs, anyone could walk in and do the same thing. And that becomes the rallying. I mean, I'm reminded, Chris, years ago, you told me that something your mother used to say years before that was like, I think...
Wait a minute. My mom is very controversial, and I don't know what you're going to say.
No, I think this is a good one. No, I think this is a good one. You said that your mom used to say when you know, people in a community or people of two communities are in conflict and the adults are acting crazy, start rounding up the children, because then people like get to come to their senses, because there's like this deep-seated, like, you know, paternal maternal instincts in us. And I'm reminded of like civil rights movement, when how did they get a lot more white people to be sympathetic? They showed on television black children be attacked by dogs and hoses. And there's something like primal about like, whoa, 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 like they're doing this to kids. And even for people who aren't typically sympathetic to African Americans, it just strikes that chord of like, oh my God, if someone did that to my kid, I'd go fucking crazy. And so sympathy was achieved among a broader group of people. There's a similar thing with like the, you know, during the Holocaust, they had Jewish kids do a hunger strike on a boat when no one would let the boat dock of Jewish refugee kids. Again, it gets back to self-interest. Like, when people can imagine themselves as being a victim in a situation, it opens up a space, and I think that's what happened here. And again, maybe frustrating that it took that, but just like you said, Trisha, it's an opportunity, and let's seize it, and hopefully this comes to more collective, unified thinking and action.
Let's hope. So we're going to end it here for this mini episode, and we will air the regularly taped episode maybe tomorrow. Let's give this a minute to breathe. Thanks for talking to me, guys. And I want to say this publicly, Trisha, thank you for taking my panicked call at 5 a.m. Pacific time. It was a lot. It meant a lot. I just want to share, like, I woke up in the morning and I had anxiety. I didn't want to leave the house. It was all like so much. And Trisha saw the phone ringing at 5 a.m. Pacific and was ready to go and was super helpful. And I love you.
So, I love you.
That's awesome.
All right, guys. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.